Pastor asked a question, you know, how have you seen God in your life this week? Well, when I was coming to church this morning, all at once I was going by the bay and I saw them ducks all at once flying all over, and I looks and here's this eagle. And this eagle was looking to have duck for breakfast, you know. But when you see special things like this, for me in my life, I always say, thank you, Lord. Thank you for letting me see that, you know. Another thing this week, my wife has been going to the same dentist for years and years and years. And she went there the other day and they said she needed $4,200 worth of work on her teeth. And something inside of me said, something's wrong here, you know. So I took her to an alternate dentist, and a total of $1,620 to have the same work done on her teeth. Well, it's not actually the same work. He said some of the work the first dentist said didn't need to be done. He said, oh, that don't need that, you know. So I just, you know, things happen in your life where suddenly you are encouraged, or there's something inside you says, this is what I have to do, you know, and it comes to your benefit. And I see that as God's prompting in my life. And I'm just thankful that he's my God, and that I can trust him, care for him, and he cares for me, you know. It's good, isn't it? It's good living like that, yeah. Okay, Adam lay with his wife Eve. This is Genesis, the 4th chapter, if you want to follow along. And she became pregnant and gave birth to Cain. And she said, with the help of the Lord, I have brought forth a man. Later, she gave birth to his brother Abel. Now, Abel kept flocks, and Cain worked the soil. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. But Abel brought fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering he did not look with favor. So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. Then the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, you will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, and if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must master it. Now Cain said to his brother Abel, let us go out to the field. And while they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. 4 people on the face of the earth, and one already gets killed. Isn't that something? Then the Lord said to Cain, where is your brother Abel? I don't know, he replied. Am I my brother's keeper? And the Lord said, what have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Now you are under a curse and driven from the ground, which opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the ground, it will no longer yield its crops for you. You will be a restless wanderer on the earth. This ends the reading of the word this morning. May God bless it to our hearts.
Again, would you pray with me? Father, you have given to us your word. It's a story we know. We don't always refer to it. We don't always talk about it. But it is your story. You put it here for a reason and for a purpose. And may we learn and may we grow. May the words of my mouth, O Lord, and the meditations of my heart, may they be pleasing and acceptable in your sight. For you, O God, are my rock and my redeemer. In Jesus' name, amen. Who are we responsible for? You ever wonder that? Who are you and I responsible for? Who is it that we have to take care of? Who is it that we keep, to use Cain's language, or watch over? It's a question we ask all the time. It's been asked ever since Cain. How far does my responsibility for other people extend? How far does it go? A lawyer once asked that question of Jesus. Who is my neighbor? Peter asked that question. How often do I have to forgive? I've asked it. Maybe you have. What is my responsibility for the people around us? We often ask it in terms of welfare programs and taxation. So we ask it about, well, how come we have to be, what is it with the immigration policy? Why are we taking all of these people in? Why is it our responsibility? I deal with it when helping the sick and the hurting and the people who walk into our congregation. I deal with it when I work with my in-laws. Well, that's just the truth. I mean, you know, it's like, this is your cousin. I said, not my cousin. No, 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 no. I married into your family. That one I deleted. It's another way of asking, why is this my problem? Well, the answer is grounded in how you and I view society and how we see it constructed. You know, we who are in the West, we tend to be more individualistic. We tend to kind of like me and mine. Often our responsibility sphere extends to the immediate families, you know, the in-laws, my parents, my kids, my grandkids, all those. That's my little sphere that I have. It extends that far and maybe a little bit farther, but not that far along. And there is a general disconnect in our culture. That's been well documented. Well, in the East, and understand that Israel is part of the Eastern culture, not the Western culture. In the Eastern culture, the idea of society is far more connected than in the West. It is the group over the individual. It is family. It is clan. It is tribe. It is all there. There's a greater sense of responsibility and interconnection. And the Bible seems to be more oriented in that direction than it is in our direction, which makes it difficult for us because we like things the way they are. There's an expectation that the people of God are going to be very connected to one another, that I am responsible for you and you are responsible for me. We are to love one another. You know, remember what Jesus said? This is a new command I give to you. You are to love one another just as I have loved you. And when you love one another, all people will know that you belong to me. John picks that up later on and said, we love one another. And if we say that we love God and we don't love our brother, we're a liar. We don't love God. Jesus said the greatest commandment of all is to love the Lord your God with your entire being, your mind, your soul, your strength, your heart. And to love your neighbor as yourself. Everything in the Bible hinges on those two. And that makes the story of Cain so disturbing and so interesting. This is not the way it's supposed to be. It's a sign of the advancement of sin. And God asks a question. We're talking about the questions of God. What questions he are asking. And he asks some fascinating questions, and it sort of centers around with, where's your brother? Where is your brother? I hope that sometime you'll sit down and read the first 11 chapters of Genesis. And I don't want you to read them like you're reading like for a Bible study or a Bible answer thing. I want you to read them as if you're reading a novel. I want you to read them in one sitting and read them all the way through and just listen to the stories. Just let the story carry you along. And every once in a while, you're going to ask a question, why is this there? And I kind of get the idea of chapter 1, and I get the idea of chapter 2, and I kind of like the idea that Adam is sitting there, and God brings this animal. He says, I'm going to call that a horse. Cow. Sparrow. Not a clue. You know, I like those. I like that. I like that idea. And then all of a sudden, he said, I need a helper. I need a partner. And God takes a rib and creates Eve, and all things are going well, and then chapter 3, it kind of goes off the rails like we talked about last week. And I understand that. I get that. And all of a sudden then, but you have this story here. You've got this story about Abel and Cain, and you have the first murder. And I'm going, why is that there? There's nothing edifying. There's nothing that lifts up about this. Until all of a sudden, I thought about, is it because there is a responsibility that we have to one another? There's a responsibility that we have that carries us from the very beginning all the way until now for one another. And I thought, there's nothing redeeming in this whole story except for one thing. At the end of it, God is still there. God is still speaking to them. He is still with them. He's still asking questions. Chapter 4, Genesis. Adam lay with his wife Eve. There's a lot of firsts in this chapter. A lot of firsts happened in this one. And you have the first birth. The first initial birth, the first creation of a person without the direct intervention of God. And she became pregnant and gave birth to Adam. Can you imagine what she thought? First time that's ever happened. I've watched three births. I've watched all the births of my three boys. I'm here to tell you, I wouldn't do it. Not a Hope and Hannah. Ain't gonna happen. I've watched them. It is an amazing, long process. And it is a painful process. And it's one of those things where you say, oh, now I understand one of the curses that God gave to Eve. I am going to greatly increase your pain in childbearing. And I'm going, no kidding. Can you imagine after that when she's holding that little baby and looking at God and said, you kind of went over the top on that one, didn't you? And she's telling us the first time we have ever had a birth. And she says, with the help of God, with the help of Yahweh, I have brought forth a man. And Eve recognizes that the creative power of God is even here in the process of having a child. And then, as the Bible is often do, it just sort of says, oh, by the way, she had another one. Wow, that was quick. And probably a year later, then she has Abel. Cain, by the way, the word Cain means to bring forth or acquire. I had, what's your name of your son? Bring forth. Why? Because I brought forth a child. I named him that, bring forth. Well, what's Abel? And it's interesting. You know what she named Abel? Vapor. Mist. Temporary. It's the same word that Solomon uses in Ecclesiastes. You can also translate it meaningless. We didn't name our kids that way. But that's what the name is. We don't know why, but that's his name. And again, there's so much that's not articulated in this story, but what is there for a reason. And Abel keeps flocks. That means goats and sheep. If you're going to talk about cattle, you talk about herds. He keeps flocks. He's got goats and sheep, and Abel works the ground. Now, you know, he experiences the curse that God gave to Adam. Now, no longer is the ground going to easily give you food, but by the sweat of your brow, you're going to earn your food. It's going to make the ground, you have to work harder to get the food to come. Hard work is how we and I eat. And in the course of time, we don't know why, we don't know what, because there is no calendar at this point. They brought an offering. They brought an offering. Now, all the offerings in the Old Testament have names. This one is called Minha, M-I-N-H-A, Minha. And it is a celebration offering. It's an offering where you honor God. It's an offering where you come in and you say, Lord, I want to tell you how great you are. Here's something to show that. And they each brought an offering. And Cain brought some of the fruit of his land. And Abel brought some of the fruit of his flocks. Now, in Abel, there's an extended definition of his gift. Number one, it is of the firstborn. Number two, it's the fat or the best portion of the animal. And what it's telling you is that Abel brought the very best of his animals and brought it before the Lord. And in response, and one of the things we also don't know is how God gave the idea that he favored one and didn't favor the other. We don't know what the indicators are. We don't know what caused that. But he said to one, I like it. And he said to the other one, not so much. I'm going to receive. I'm not going to receive. I accept with joy. I don't really want that. He looked on favor on Adam's and on Cain's. He did not look on favor. And for the first time in the Bible, someone is angry. For the first time in the Bible, someone is angry. In fact, it says he was furious. he burned hot with anger. He was absolutely furious. And fury rarely brings about anything good. He isn't just furious, his face is downcast. Do you, when you read that in the Bible, do you ever wonder, what is that? You know, down, you know what it is? It's depressed, dejected, disappointed. Have you ever disappointed your kids? If they want something, you know, they were hoping for something for Christmas and you gave them something they didn't want. You ever see that face? That's downcast. Now, put downcast, dejection, disappointment with fury, that's quite a toxic mix. And he was extraordinarily angry, and then God says to him, and this is one of God's brilliant questions, why are you angry? What's the purpose of being angry? Are you blaming someone else? Here's the thing. If you refuse to accept responsibility for the problem, it has to then land on someone else. His options are limited. He's either going to be angry at God or he's going to be angry at his brother. Which one do you think is easier? And God said, why are you angry? This isn't, no one else did this but you. Now, there's a lot of discussion among scholars about what's the reason that Cain's offering wasn't accepted. I think the most common and most well-received one is the fact that he just didn't bring the best. He brought whatever was available. He just kind of brought whatever is there. Maybe he brought bruised fruit, or maybe he brought stuff that wasn't, you know, the best. He just brought something. Some people said he didn't bring blood. Well, he's not a blood person. He's a, you know, Minhah wasn't a blood sacrifice. It was, you know, he just brought. It was to honor God. Why are you angry? Didn't you pick the fruit? Didn't you bring that? Why are you angry? What about this makes you so upset? Why are you disappointed? Why are you dejected? What's going on here? Why is this such an emotional response? And what are you going to do with this? What direction is this going to take? Do you ever ask yourself why you're angry at something? If you get passed over for promotion, if your spouse does something that you don't like, what is it that makes you angry about that? Why are you angry? It's a great question. You know, somebody cuts you off in traffic. Why are you angry? Well, you know, one of the reasons I'm angry is that I have the right to be there before anybody else. Have you ever noticed that? Have you ever noticed that a lot of our anger comes from our selfishness? You know, you ever been in line at one of the stores, Myers, Walmart, Tom's, you know, and you're standing beside someone who decides that they just got to take forever to find that coupon that's in their purse or in their wallet, and they stand there forever, and you're going, don't they know how important I am? Well, you know, we don't say that out loud because it sounds stupid, but it rings in our head. Or you're sitting in line at Burger King or McDonald's or Yo Quiero Taco Bell, and all of a sudden there's this person and he can't decide what's going on. You're thinking, this is not the definition of fast food. Why am I angry? What is it? Do you have a misjudged sense, a misguided sense of what you deserve? And God said, look, here's the thing. If you do what is right, won't you be accepted? Well, okay, Cain then didn't do what was right. That's why he wasn't looked on with favor. If you do what's right, you're going to be fine. It's not complicated. If you want God's blessings, you do what he asks. From beginning to end, obedience is so key in the Bible. But if you do not do what is right, oh, like a predatory animal, sin is couching at your door and it desires to have you. You have to be the master of it. It cannot be the master of you. Is anger a sin? No. It's an emotional response. How many of you have ever been scared? Anybody come up behind you and scare you? What's your first response? Ah! What's your second response? Arr! That's biological. Can't change it. Biological. Whenever you're, something frightens you, it's your flight, fight response. Ugh. It's a, the Bible says, anger's not sinning. Do not in your anger sin. That's found in Psalm 4 and Ephesians 4. Do not in your anger sin. Don't hold on to anger. Make sure you don't go to bed. Don't hold on to your anger and don't nurse it and give it an opening. To nurse your anger, to hold the grudge, that just gives Satan a wide, that's like opening the garage door for Satan. Gives him all sorts of opportunities and the results are disastrous. And Cain makes a wrong decision and he hangs on to it. He doesn't do what is right. He does not do what is right. He does what is wrong. And he holds on to his anger and he blames. Now Cain said to his brother Abel, let's go out in the field. First deception in the Bible. Let's go out in the field. Come on, come with me. And while they were out in the field, Cain rose up and attacked his brother and killed him. Had to have been bloody, because it's described that way. First murder in the Bible. Isn't it amazing? We've gone in chapter 3 from disobeying God to fratricide in a matter of verses. Boom. That's how fast it accelerated. And nothing else is said about the act. You know what else is not mentioned? The reaction of Adam and Eve. The reaction of mom and dad. How do they process that one? You know, they're still dealing with being tossed out of the garden, and now they've got to be out here for a while. This is not like a year or two afterwards. This is a long time, maybe 15, 18 years afterwards. How do you go home and say, what'd you do today, Cain? Well, I killed my brother. How do you respond to that? How do you respond to that? How do they find it? How do you discover it? And God comes to Cain because he knew. He saw. And he asks Cain, where's your brother? Brilliant question. What'd you do? Tell me what happened. I'm going to give you an opportunity to make things right. I want you to tell me what happened. Let's bring the issue out into the open. I know what happens. That's just not a casual question. There is a reason he is doing this. Tell me what is going on. And lo and behold, Cain does something else. Here's another first. You have the very first lie in the Bible. The very first lie in the Bible. I don't know. And we have picked that one up and run it. You know, my brother and I, we're 10 and a half months apart. I got to tell you, I am surprised my parents are sane. We were stinkers. We really were. I'd give you long examples, but that's just embarrassing. We would do things like, who put the hamster in the dryer? I don't know. You know. Who did fill in the blank? I don't know. I don't know. We're lying. We're lying. Where do we learn it? Well, I got mine from Cain. I don't know. And then he asks, am I my brother's keeper? What's my responsibility? Why do I have to know? Why am I responsible for him? I don't even like him. I don't care. I don't know. Why am I? What is this? Why are you asking me? I'm separating myself from the family. I am pushing myself away. I have no responsibility. Do you have a sibling that you don't always connect well with? Do you have a sibling that you don't always get along well with? I do. But I'm always responsible for Jeff. Jeff's my brother. You know, we would fight like cats and dogs, but nobody else fought with him. He was my brother. I took care of him. I protected him. Cain says, I want nothing to do with him. I want to push him as far away as I possibly can. And then God says, what have you done? Just like Genesis chapter 3, verse 13. What have you done? Tell me. Tell me. Take responsibility. Do you realize that if you and I refuse to take responsibility or to be accountable for our actions, we have burned the bridges of reconciliation? That if we don't take responsibility for what we do, there is no way we can reconcile with it. How are you forgiven something you refuse to acknowledge? And Cain said, I don't want anything to do with it. What have you done? Cain says nothing. So God continues, listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. God tells him exactly, I know what you did. The ground is testifying against you. It's crying, screaming about the blood that it has swallowed. It opens its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. You killed him. So here's the deal. You want to cut yourself off from family? I'm going to cut you off from everything. You were a farmer? No more. The land will refuse to give you any food. When you work the land, no longer will crops come from it. You thought you were going to get your food that way? No, it's going to become infinitely harder. As difficult as you might have thought it was, it's going to become worse. Now, from being someone who produces fruit, you're going to be a hunter and a gatherer. You're just going to pick what you can from where you can get it. And you are going to be a restless wanderer. That's how the NIV translated it. You're going to be a fugitive, forever wandering from place to place. You will have no anchor point. You will have no place that you call home. He has removed everything from him. You'll see that there is something in the Bible that says periodically that God cut off this person, that he just cut off Cain. Why? Because he was no longer connected. If I am no longer connected to a person, I no longer see them as a human being. Therefore, I am free to do whatever I want to with them. The Bible is huge on connection. Let me give you one word alone, the word brother. The word brother is used 584 times in the Bible. It is used 135 times in Genesis alone. And it doesn't mean just biological brother. Throughout the Bible, we talk about brothers being those who are fellow believers or in the same genetic family or in the same ethnic family or in the same human family. We are brothers and we are sisters. We are connected to one another and we will always be so in the eyes of God. We will always be connected to people. We might forget that or we might miss those connections, but we will always, always, always be there. And when we ask, who is my brother or my sister or who is my neighbor, let me tell you how we answer that question here. We answer it with the baby pantry. Every day we have people. We may not know what their names are, but we know that we're connected to them. And because we're connected to them, we feel that there is a responsibility that we have to them. And that's why we do it. We want to take care of those infants. We want to make sure those infants have what is necessary for the emergency bridge point. When they walk down there, and when Pam sees them, or Joyce sees them, or with Bill and Grace sees them, or Joan sees them, or they just get excited. They like to see them. The little kids come. They are greeted with smiles and receptivity and a sense that, yes, you belong here at this moment. Another way that you and I demonstrate this is in Safe Harbor. We come in with individuals that really don't have any other connection anywhere in this community other than a few people, and we come in and they are part of our family for 7 days. They are part of our house. They sleep here. They eat here. They are with us. And we see them not as those people, but our people. And it needs to extend far beyond this. This year, with the boxes, I think we sent out, what? How many boxes did we send out? 25? We sent out 34 boxes for Operation Christmas Child. You know, you think that's such a small little tethered of connection. You know, we could send that to believers around the world, small children that we will never know, all of a sudden know that they have not been forgotten by the world. But there is a little box containing really fun little things that on the large scale seem to mean nothing, but really mean everything. We are connected to the other churches in this community. We are connected to the other individuals in this community. You and I are connected to the believers in China, in Yemen, in South Africa. We are connected to the believers in Finland. We're connected to the believers in Japan, everywhere. We are connected because there is one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one body. And we are responsible for them as best as we can be. We're connected with people that we don't understand and people that we don't agree with. We are connected because God has given to us His love. This is my commandment, that you will love one another. Where is your brother? Well, you know, my brother's down at Speedway. Or my brother is over sitting in the park because he has no other place to go. My brother's the one sitting in the car next to me who can't figure out where he wants to go. My brother is my neighbor next door who is in need of help snow blowing his driveway. My brother is the individual that I come in contact with who is loved and who is cared for by God. And I have a responsibility to him or her, because that's God's design. And if it seems like an overwhelming job, it might be at times, but one of the beautiful things is that you and I don't do this alone. We do it with brothers and sisters around us. We do it with those around the world. But more importantly, we do it in the power and authority of Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit who falls upon us. And one of the joys I have is they said, who is my brother? Who is my sister? And I say, oh, the people of West Bay Covenant Church. And aren't they delightful? I'm so glad I'm a part of the family of God, because we are connected. And we do belong to one another. If only Cain had discovered that. Well, God bless you.